Welcome to the Deep Roots at Home podcast. For those of you new here, the Deep Roots at Home website was founded by Jackie in 2011. As a retired RN, longtime homeschooler, past Lyme sufferer with a love of preventative natural medicinals, Jackie has encouraged women for years now. Our desire is to spread truth and important information during these recent deceptive times, as well as the practicals of homemaking and all things beautiful. Whether you are listening in the car, while you're making dinner for your children, or sitting with a relaxing cup of tea, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Deep Roots at Home podcast, and I am so happy to have you here today. We have a special treat today. We have Linda LaCour Hobar, who is the author of The Mystery of History. She is a passionate follower of Christ, a genuine people person, and a fan of comfortable high heels. Through homeschooling and missionary service, she discovered a deep love for world history and a clear call to write. With 20 plus years of worldwide circulation, The Mystery of History has been well received by all ages for its warmth and readability. A native-born Texan, Linda holds a bachelor's degree from Baylor University, where she first fell in love with world history. She resides in Tennessee, where she continues to obsess over matters big and small. And I personally have used The Mystery of History with my children in educating them. So it is just a special treat to have you on the podcast today, Linda. Welcome.
Thank you, Jenny. It's so good to see you. And you didn't even reveal that you do work for me. So we know each other pretty well.
Yes,
you contribute
I
quite
do.
A bit with your social media skills. So thank you.
That's right. So today we are talking about filling the rooms of home education. So if we were to think of homeschooling as kind of a word picture of a well-built house, home education needs a strong foundation, a working frame, and multiple rooms to fill. And what do we fill those rooms with but knowledge? So using this Proverbs 24:4 house analogy, Linda's going to share with us the benefits of categorizing academics into stair-step subjects and living subjects to fill your homeschool with all precious and pleasant riches. So I am just going to let you take it from here, Linda, and share your wisdom with us today.
Thanks, Jenny. And I think the first thing I'll do is give this Bible verse that is just one of my favorites. I think it paints this word picture really well for us. So I'll use my narrator voice and quote for you Proverbs 24:3-4, which says, "Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches." Isn't that beautiful? I just love that verse, especially to think that learning could be precious and pleasant, you know, even though some days in reality, it's not so pleasant. We all know that. But if we would back away and look at, again, what are we filling our rooms with? It's knowledge. Well, in my opinion, and from my experience, I think that our subject matters, you know, the common ones, fall into two categories, generally speaking, and we would call those stair-step subjects and living subjects. I kind of nicknamed the second one myself, but here's how they're different. So stair-step subjects are the ones that really do require mastery, at least on one level, before you could advance to the next level. And I guess the best example of that's probably math, because certainly to learn subtraction, you have to understand addition, or to master division, you need to understand multiplication and so on. So mastery and understanding is really a must to advance in math. As a matter of fact, if you miss a step, you will pay the consequence. I don't know about you, Jenny, but though I've taken algebra and can work variables, you know, sometimes I stop and I am still counting 8 + 3 on my fingers, like 8, 9, 10, 11. You know, it's ridiculous, but that one fact always just kind of slows me down.
Right.
So you do pay a price for skipping steps in those stair-step subjects. And in case you're wondering if there are others, I'd say yes, probably language arts, maybe foreign languages, those could qualify, because certainly you couldn't write a paragraph unless you knew how to write a sentence, and you can't write a sentence if you wouldn't understand that there are nouns and verbs. So yes, those are kind of stair-step-ish. But moving on, the other ones I like to nickname living subjects. They're my favorites. And I borrowed the term from really a more common term of living books. You know, that's kind of a hot button word in
like
homeschooling today?
Kind of approach.
Yes. That word or that expression, living books, if it's new to you, I'll define that real quickly and then we'll apply it to subjects. But living books are those that are usually written by a single author instead of a committee. They tend to draw on stories. They usually have a moral tone or message, and they're memorable because of the characters, be it that they're real or imagined. Okay, so these are living books.
Right.
And where the opposite is the ones that are very textbook, all data, all facts. And certainly there's a place for those in this world, but the living books are really your read aloud, your children's adventure novels, etc.
When it comes to vaccines, most mothers and fathers want to know facts, not others' opinions. Jackie wished she had known more facts when she went in for her first well baby visit. Because Jackie strongly promotes parental choice, she felt led to write a short treatise with personal facts. This vaccination ebook is pretty concise to allow you, the parent, to read, research into the studies she shares, and come up with your own decisions. Jackie's sincere desire is that you and your children thrive, and so she presents to you the vaccination ebook free of charge. Simply go to deeprootsathome.com/vital-info-ebook/. That's deeprootsathome.com/vital-info-ebook/.
So thinking of how books could kind of be that way, I think our subject matters can be the same. There can be living subjects where some of those same things apply. We would say, well, they're commonly put together, these curriculums, by single authors instead of committees. They're story oriented, there's moral lessons, and they're usually memorable because of the content or the characters involved. And some examples of living subjects, earth science could qualify, Bible, electives like cooking, zoology, astronomy, even woodshop. I would also say the mystery of history, my own, in my opinion, is a living subject for all these reasons. And just to go back and clarify, so if stair-step subjects like math require mastery, well, the living subjects just don't. Let's use history as an example, because of course that's my best example. But a student is not required to master the study of ancient times to necessarily delve into medieval. Now, it might be a good idea to go in order, but you don't have to master one thing to get to another in history. It just can go everywhere. Now, to help with this visualization, I have a couple of other nicknames for these living subjects. So if I was talking to children, I don't know, let's say a fourth grader, I would probably tell them that these living subjects are spider web subjects because spiders are more exciting. Well, maybe not exciting. Perhaps that's the wrong word. Interesting, terrifying to some. Anyway, it's more fun. But spider web subjects literally go all directions, like a spider web. It's endless the directions you could go with a subject. Take cooking, for example. Like the spread of a spider web, well, the culinary arts, you could literally study from all over the world. You could study it by culture. You could study by nutrition. You could study by style. You could study by flavor. It's endless the ways you could study food. So spider web subjects. But if I'm talking to adults, I do have a different terminology. So if I'm talking to adults, I like to refer to these living subjects as sofa subjects, because what I'm implying is that these are the subjects where everyone can sit on one sofa and learn together. So picture that on a good homeschool day if they're not fussing too much with each other. Sometimes it leads to poking and other things that are going on the sofa, but it means you can grab that whole family together, learn a subject on all different levels. A good example of that would be studying something like the Trojan War. Honestly, a four-year-old can enjoy that story because they're that Trojan horse. I mean, it's not to like about that. But someone age 34 can enjoy the story. Someone 104 can enjoy the story. So really all ages could enjoy the story of the Trojan War. So that's why I'm going to call it a sofa subject. Yeah, Jenny, what comes to your mind? Yeah.
I was going to say, I was taught at home myself back in the 80s when, you know, it wasn't popular. But I have to say, with my mom and my sister, those sofa subjects were some of our favorites, you know, just being able to all together as a family, enjoy these stories and the learning that was occurring in such a informal but just really rich way.
A little more relaxed, to be honest, because we're literally on the sofa together. Or maybe there's, you know, a couple strewn on the floor and maybe they're coloring quietly, but you're together.
Right. Right.
One of the beautiful parts of home education.
Yeah.
So, well, now for the sake of our listeners, I wanted to just run through kind of quick what I think are benefits to differentiating these subjects, at least mentally. And so I have 7 quick benefits. And if you're ready to go or note taker, I'll just rattle through these. Okay.
Go ahead.
So number one, I think a benefit to knowing if something is stair step is that it might just help you pace yourself better. Let's go back to math as an example. If a student is stuck on some subtraction problems, I think it means slow down. And you can. You have the liberty to do that as a home educator. So you can slow down on stair step subjects if somebody's just frustrated. You know they're just not getting something. And in the very same manner, you could also speed up if they're incredibly bored with it. So stair step helps you pace by just going, they really need to master this to get to that. But oh, look, they already have. Let's just move on. Be good stewards of our time. So that's one benefit. Number two, I think a benefit to discovering that something is a living subject. Like you're like, oh, I see now. That's living. That's a living subject. Those subjects are the ones easier on the teaching parent because you can merge students of all ages together. And if people didn't already know this, I believe that's a survival skill of successful home educators is merging students together where you can, that one house, one room schoolhouse mentality.
Yep.
Now, I have to go back to history as an example, but oh goodness, if there are some, maybe we're coming out of a traditional school mentality and you might think, okay, I need the second grader in state history. I need the fourth grader in the American Civil War. And I need my ninth grader in Renaissance because such and such says, you know, they're following a scope and sequence from some authority. That honestly is very hard on a teacher, hard on a family. But as a homeschool parent, you have the luxury to streamline efforts, put everybody together. And let's say, hey, this is the year we're all going to do state history, or this is the year we're all going to do the Civil War, or this is the year we're all going to do the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And oh, it's just so much more rewarding, especially if you like messy projects. Well, actually, I don't know if anybody likes messy projects, but there's a few you ought to enter in for fun. Like if you want to have a medieval feast. Well, honestly, I just want to have a medieval feast like once. I don't know if I want to do it every single time somebody hits sixth grade, you know, because then I have to do 3 or 4 of them, right? So, bundling works for living subjects. Here's another benefit, number 3. I think when you begin to recognize these categories, it might help you farm out the kids where you really need to. You know, send them to a tutor or a tutor or co-op. Or let an older teacher younger, if it's one of those categories, it's not your strength. Again, that's another survival skill for homeschoolers. But here's an example. Let's just say, Jenny, and this might be true of you. Let's say if you were the master of a stair step subject like grammar, well, I would say that's not the one you would ever want to farm out because you know it well, that's your subject. So you keep it in house. But for the sake of your sanity, you farm out somebody that's real, a subject that's real craft oriented, you know, let someone else do the paper mache in a living subject or vice versa. Now, being that I was a living subject lady, that's where my enthusiasm would be. I farmed out, I farmed out a lot of the stair step subjects like upper level math, AP chemistry, and I never doubted that that was a good choice for our family. Because I recognize my strengths and weaknesses. So hopefully you'll do the same. Real quick, Jenny, if you had a druther right there, which would you picture yourself farming out between the categories?
Oh, man. I think I would definitely farm out more of the creative, crafty stuff. Yeah.
I had you pegged right.
Although I have to say, the math, that's my husband's category.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. We're never going to shine on all the subjects. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, number four, I think another benefit to even glancing at our subjects this way is it might provide insight into your students' learning styles. So let's say, what about the student that really lights up when you pull out a stair step subject? That's probably a clue that they may be a very concrete sequential learner. That's the person that's just black and white. You know what I'm saying? They like a checklist, they like a box, and they want to plow through. And they're probably good time managers. But you probably have some children or you yourself who lights up for the living subjects. And that's a clue they're probably abstract, random. That's a free spirit. That's me. And so you want to kind of look at that and think through it. What excites your students? What excites you? And certainly it's okay if everybody's a little different. You know, there's no judgment that one has of any higher ranking than the other. We need people in this world doing both. We need people that are on both sides of that spectrum, I think. But think about that. Let's see, number five, another benefit to categorizing subjects. And remember, we're filling our rooms with pleasant riches, is it may lead you down a path of even a different curriculum. Let's say, for example, you've had something in your hands. Maybe somebody gave it to you and you're like, thanks, but it's a very stair-step oriented curriculum that doesn't have to be. Maybe it has some living elements to it, but for whatever reason, it's a curriculum that's very checkbox oriented, has a lot of lists, has a lot of to-dos. You know, it's very regimented. And you know your family's not happy with it. Well, maybe it's time to change directions and find there are curriculums that are more free-spirited out there, you know, that'll pull in more creative spurts. Or the same could be true the opposite. And believe it or not, my children were a little bit this way. So here I am, the free-spirited one, right? I would have been a great unschooling mom. But my children, every single one of them was a bit more, regimented than me, naturally speaking, especially my oldest, the firstborn. She really yearned for things that were very concrete and tangible. I guess one of my favorite examples might be studying earthworms, okay, for science. So if I'm studying an earthworm, well, I'm going to go find one on the playground. That to me is the best lesson all day long. You know, like that'll be fun. We'll go find one, we'll name it, we'll raise him, whatever. But my daughter would honestly probably not feel satisfied because she wouldn't have something to show for it. She'd be just as happy to find a diagram of him off the internet, print it, label it, punch three holes in it, put it in a binder, and then she'd feel like she had something to show for her work, you know? So she enjoyed paperwork where I resist paperwork. So that's always a clue of your learning style. But anyway, I think that that's important to kind of think about and give yourself grace, you know, all ways, all directions. Another benefit, number six, I think it might help those of us that may be guilty of comparing our children against each other. I think if we recognize the categories, it might lessen that temptation. For example, let's take a stair step subject. Maybe you're frustrated with your third grader who you think should be on a certain level and they're just not there yet. And, we have to ask ourselves, whose standard are we setting anyway? You know, where did that scope and sequence come from? It's so funny to me that we expect, you know, we don't expect kids to like lose teeth at the same time, learn to ride bikes at the same time. Why do we expect them to all learn long division at the same time, you know, in a certain year? It's just like, I think it's an unfair thing to put on students. Are these set, you know, prerequisites for what should be learned in fourth grade? So if you have the temptation to compare your children, maybe if you recognize that you don't have to, because stair step subjects can be adjusted. That's the freedom you have at home, is to not necessarily follow a scope and sequence from an institution, but follow the one for the child. Let the child set their own scope and sequence, so to speak. Like, victory for him is a little advancement here or pulling back there, but you don't have to compare him against the siblings. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
It is no secret that Jackie loves TRS, but some have asked exactly what is TRS? TRS is a nanozeolite spray that facilitates some amazing things. TRS does not heal anything, but it gently clears the body of toxins and heavy metals, so the body can heal itself exactly as God designed it to do. Why not get to the root cause instead of just applying Band-Aids? Excellent supplements and individual remedies can help, but they cannot help as much until you remove the root source of inflammation and disease. Detoxing toxins and metals is foundational to good health. TRS is safe for the elderly and for children as well. For more information, go to www.deeprootsathome.com/TRS.
I think this may, you know, give a lot of freedom to moms, you know, that maybe are feeling, maybe they're just feeling the weight of doing it all, you know, and trying to fit into the box of the government system. And, you know, maybe realizing the difference between these subjects, and it's okay. It's okay to spend more time on one than another. It's okay to, you know, slow down on a stair step subject or speed up on one. It's okay to involve the whole family in the living subjects. You know, this kind of thinking can be so freeing to a mom who maybe is still trying to fit into that mold or that box of the government school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know what contributes to the boxes we tend to put ourselves in? It's the naysayers. It might be that truly caring aunt or uncle who just doesn't have a vision for home education, and, you know, or the loving grandparents who at the end of the day, they care about you, but they may be judging and looking and thinking, well, so-and-so's not up to snuff in their math or whatever. And so, yeah, the pressure is real is all I'm saying. We do find pressure. But I think, you know, in love, one of our ways to help balance that out with the naysayers is we do need to show the positives to other, even in our own spirits. I think that there are statistics to prove how well homeschoolers are doing. You can find some of that on the internet. If you look under Brian Ray, I mean, there's things to show that homeschooling has stood the test of time. And then I think we have to just love our naysayers through it and realize most of them are coming from a good place.
Well, and really, I think even this generation, because homeschooling really wasn't popular until the last, you know, 20 years, the generation beyond us doesn't understand it near as much, because that's all they ever knew was, you know, the government school system. So you have this now, these last 20 years or so of homeschoolers coming on board, but their parents or grandparents are not necessarily understanding the way maybe in another 20 years, the grandparents of that generation would understand a little bit more, because they saw it themselves.
Right. Well, we're going to have more data in the next couple decades. Yeah. Plain and simple. And certainly, like any system of anything that man touches, we don't get it all right. It's not that we're doing it perfectly.
Right.
It's an alternative. And it's that way because somewhere in the 1900s, late 1800s, school became compulsory and was handed over to the government. But prior to that, it's like home education isn't actually new. It's thousands of years old. It's what people did. But our modern homeschool movement, yes, it's a newer thing. Right. But anyway, I was just going to say, as a last benefit, number 7, I think by seeing things as stair step or living, it might help us also adjust some unrealistic expectations. I'll use myself as an example. Jenny, if you knew me when I was young, you never would have predicted that I would care about the living subject of world history. Trust me, I was a very self-absorbed, immature young girl, and I showed no promise, is what I'm saying. If you knew me in grammar school, junior high, most of high school, I mean, I made good grades because I cared, but I held no deep interest, like in world history. I certainly never thought I would be writing a curriculum about it. My point being that it was the Lord that drew that out of me. It was when he whispered to me the mystery of history. It was kind of a a sense of calling for me to fall in love with history and then want to write it for my children, all to encourage the mom or dad listening that if you have a student who just seems unenthused to learn anything at all, give them a little breathing room and a little grace. It may require some maturity. I literally was 40 years old before I started writing The Mystery of History. So it wasn't in my vision plan, and it wasn't something that you would have thought would have come out of me as a student. Not that I was a bad student, but I certainly wasn't an overly ambitious student. So, you know, adjust your unrealistic expectations.
Right. Absolutely.
I think we put a lot on kids these days. Well, if you think about it, we really do. Like even in sports, sports today aren't what they used to be. We used to just have sports to play, but of course now they are so much more competitive and they travel. And you know what I'm saying? We've ramped up a lot of expectations. Just have to be cautious of that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Now, I have a little assignment for your listeners.
Okay.
You didn't know you were getting homework, but a small assignment. And that would be, I would hope after hearing this, that people would either physically or mentally either go home and look at your shelf of home education materials and literally divide them into these two categories, just to visually see them. And if you have too many to pull out and divide on the floor, then just do it by paper. But say to yourself, okay, that's really a living subject, aha. And that really is a stair step subject, and just kind of pull back. And once you see them, then I want you to do two things. I want you to pray first that God would just help you manage your subjects well, whatever they are. And some of them may feel like they fall in between and you can't even tell, but we're just going to pray before the Lord, because again, none of us arrive at this as perfect homeschool parents. Oh, heavens no. You know, we're learning, most of us, as we go. And then after praying, I would ask that you would just like ponder over any adjustments you could make where you're like, and now that I see it, you know, so-and-so really needs a little less structure. Or you look at it and go, you know, now that you think about it, or now that I think about it, it looks like that's a subject I could delegate an older student to teach a younger student, because maybe it's very concrete and that's something that they could do. You have an older student who's gifted in something that takes something off your plate. Or maybe some of you need to insert some electives because you look and realize just about everything you have is rigorous and very, you know, requiring mastery. Maybe you need to lighten up a little bit, you know, insert some zoology or cooking. Electives really are wonderful. And I hope that people recognize or leave room in the day for some electives. And not that even we have to call them electives, but it just, that you certainly are feeling the freedom to spend extra time in the kitchen and call it school when you're really just learning to cook or whatever. And then some people need to just even consider flip-flopping the time of day you teach. If you're sleepy in the mornings, which was always me, actually I was sleepy morning and afternoon. I tend to fall asleep if I read too much at any given time, but you might have to think about what's the best time of day to do those more rigorous stair step subjects. Do we need to knock those out early when mama has coffee? And then do we save the hands-on fun stuff for the afternoon that's more living? Or do we need to flip-flop? Do we need to start the day with the living subjects because we need it for enthusiasm, and then maybe get more nitty-gritty in the afternoon because that's when the baby naps? You know, right, or something like that. Certainly think of time of day that's best for each of those subjects. And I'm sure when it was all said and done, we mixed it up quite a bit. You know what I'm saying? Our days didn't always look the same. But one thing I was pretty faithful to do is I carved out time every day for school, because school works best at home. Isn't it funny? It's called homeschool, but you know, sometimes we can be so busy with sports or co-ops and clubs that, you know, we're in the car on the go.
Not home. That's right. That's
not
right.
Home. So yeah. I did try to carve out time. And for us, most of the time that was our morning hours. And then we would break for lunch. And a lot of times for us, the afternoon would be the living subjects, but certainly do whatever works.
Right. I know there are families that even where the mom is having to work, that maybe they're needing to do Saturday school. you know.
Oh.
And being creative is one of the benefits and beauties of homeschool to fit it around your lifestyle.
Or night school, literally. Like
Night.
maybe math is at 8 o'clock at night when dad's home.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, here we are and it's springtime and everyone is kind of getting that itch to be through for the year. You know, you may feel burnt out. You may feel just like you're barely making it to the end of another school year. And so I can see this being very beneficial for moms that maybe are rethinking, how do I do this next year? You know, they're maybe thinking through, you know, it's going to be coming up here on the homeschool conventions. And, you know, it's a time when moms reevaluate, what did I do last year that really worked for me? And what do I want to change for next year? So I can see this being really helpful for moms that are thinking, you know, how do I want to tweak this for next year to maybe make it that much more
just rewarding.
Yes, rewarding and less of a, I think we take on so much heaviness. We take on so many expectations, like you mentioned, from other people, from just general society, and most of all from ourselves. And so, you know, this may be, you know, just us spurring on to some moms to have the freedom to reevaluate, to tweak it, to fit your lifestyle and to fit your family and your children and those stair step subjects or the living subjects. Where are the strengths and weaknesses of your own children? So I really appreciate this because I think that this could be really beautiful timing for some people as they're finishing this year, thinking about next year.
And I'll give one more example. You jogged my memory of something years and years ago. There was a real sweet friend who knew that financially we were not doing real well. We were single income missionary family. So we were always, you know, homeschooling, watching every penny and every dime, you know, just getting by. And so one time she donated to me as a gift to our ministry, she donated like a whole trunk full of curriculum. And it was so thoughtful. But I will say it very quickly became a burden because it was pretty much all stair step material.
Yeah.
And so they took even some living subjects, but put it in the format of being very stair-step oriented. And it took me a while to kind of figure it out. It took me a while to even free myself from the burden because it had been a gift and I wanted to be a good steward of that gift. So I used as much as I could, but then I like to kind of look sometimes at your learning style as like a toolbox. And I recognized that I needed to swap out some of the tools. You know, you don't have to chuck the whole toolbox, but I needed to pull out a few things that might've even been, now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure that was given to me before I wrote The Mystery of History. And it made me yearn for a more living subject in history than some of what was out there. So anyway, yeah, I just hope people will think through it and then just feel a little step ahead at the end of the day.
Well, this is wonderful, Linda. Thank you so very much. And I want to encourage our listeners to check out your website, themysteryofhistory.com. Check out wonderful curriculum. The history curriculum is fantastic. Some of my favorite memories of homeschooling my children are doing the simple things like wrapping my children up with toilet paper to make them into mummies when we were studying the Egyptians. We did a China feast one night when we were learning about the dynasties and things like that. And it can just add a whole level of, like you said, such freedom and enjoyment in teaching your children. Anyhow, check out her curriculum. She also has a blog that is chock full of wisdom. No matter what curriculum you use, it's just so encouraging for homeschoolers in general. And she has her own podcast as well. And a newsletter that she sends out regularly that's just rich. So Linda is a wealth of wisdom. So I would encourage our listeners to check out all she has to offer. And I just want to thank you. Your time is very valuable. You're a very busy woman. And so I just appreciate the time that you've taken to come on the podcast today and encourage our listeners.
Well, I tell you, it's not an easy journey to teach at home, but it's one of the best. It's so rewarding. And I want to encourage the moms and dads who even today might be going, okay, I'm tired. It's that time of year, but press on. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Roots at Home podcast. We pray it has encouraged you in your walk with the Lord and as you serve your family. Could you do us a favor? If this has blessed you, could you help us spread the word by liking and sharing this podcast with your friends? And don't forget, we have lots of great links in the show notes that go along with today's podcast. See you next time.